All right, this is part two of a two-part episode that Adam and I recorded. We just got to talking for about an hour about Cam Thomas, about De'Ron Sharpe, about how the Nets are going to, how they're going to bring along these guys during the year, what else we could see from them in terms of rotations. In this next part, we focus a little bit more on Sharpe and who his comps are on the team, how he might fit in, what his, you know, what his skills are, what might help him on the team this year, what might hold him back a little bit. It's a pretty wide-ranging conversation, and like I said, you can check out part one, which we posted yesterday. So this one after the theme music, you're going to hear us basically jump right back into the conversation because it was part of a longer one. And like I said, here it comes, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn. Yeah, so I think at this point, like, you know, you mentioned before about how this is in evaluating sort of like what the Nets roster is looking like, how we have these young guys on the team right now. It does feel like while Cam Thomas is a question mark around his ultimate ceiling and what he can become, I think that that's definitely far from known at this point. It is known, I think, that he has a future in the NBA. I think that part is at least is pretty clear, right? Like short of a total flame out somehow or injury, and even the injury, I gotta tell you, I worry even less. On a grand scheme, I worry less about the injuries. On a year to year basis, I really worried about it. From a career standpoint, so many guys have just come back from injuries at this point to like still get paid and have careers that it used to be like, oh, you know, just avoid an injury. It's like, I don't know. A lot of the guys get injured and seem to just be fine. I don't know, like it's just
right. They were injured. Now they're healthy. Like it's not that thing where you get hurt and you go, how long could this be? It could be a season, and that's a long time. But then the next year, it's not like they come back diminished. It's not like they come back and they can't find the same game that they used to have. The injuries are far less severe in terms of what you are afterwards. I think it used to be a lot different in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. So I think from that standpoint, it's just a reaffirmation that the Nets, again, got a total steal in the draft here with Thomas. But I don't think there's worry. It's really worry. The only concern or question now, Mark, is how much time he gets to play this year and how they ultimately envision his role when he's playing with the actual guys. But we have seen other stuff from some of the other rookies here, you know, who they drafted, and we were, you know, bullish on some of these guys and sort of hoping and dreaming on a couple other ones. I mean, we can get into Sharpe now because I know when you talked to Candace Cooper, she kind of said some stuff that I don't know. We're in a world where Candace Cooper's great. So this is going to sound like I was going to take a dig at her. I wasn't. We're in a world where podcasts like ours just can trend toward the superlative a little more because, one, it's fun to talk about things that are positive, I think, generally, at least for us it is. And, I don't know, in the back of your mind, you're kind of like, it's sometimes nicer to look at the glass half full for stuff than it is. And so when you talk to Candace Cooper about De'Ron Sharpe, I don't know, when you went into that interview, I mean, I guess you can just, anyone that didn't listen to it, recap some of the stuff Candace said, because I think this is interesting in the old maybe wasn't what you were expecting to hear when you jumped onto a post-draft thing, you know, chomping at the bit to talk about De'Ron Sharpe, and then Candace kind of, I don't know if she threw cold water at it, but it's interesting. Okay, recap it a little bit so everyone knows.
Yeah, and by the way, so leading up to the draft, you and I were talking about some of the prospects, and De'Ron Sharpe was very much attached to the Brooklyn Nets at the back end of the first round, even before they traded Landry Shamet to get the second pick there. And at the time, when we looked at the tape, we said, okay, this almost feels like a replacement for DeAndre Jordan in a lot of like-for-like ways. Has good skill sets as far as a little bit of pick-and-roll work, some passing out of the five, which is a nice thing to have. Rebounder, great. But also doesn't have much of a shot. And that it seemed like you and I said, is this what you want to spend your pick on? Replacing a guy that you effectively buried on the bench at the end of the year and into the postseason? So when I got on with Candace Cooper, after all the hype leading up to the draft around team workouts, saying, oh, the perimeter shot is there, I thought someone like Candace Cooper, who's so plugged in with the Tar Heels, was going to be like, oh my God, yeah, just you wait. This guy's going to start raining it down from the perimeter. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a whole new dynamic for this Nets offense, et cetera, et cetera. Right? A great compliment with Nick Claxton and what he does defensively, all these great things. And to be clear, Candace highlighted all the great things that she thinks that De'Ron Sharpe does do. There's a lot of positives that she puts on him. But one of the immediate things that she said was, no, in the short term, he is not going to be shooting for you. That is not a part of his game. And we discussed how the college game and for him underneath Roy Williams, you end up falling into this swath of, are you getting enough minutes? Are you getting enough consistent minutes? How beholden is a head coach to seniors on his roster, which Roy Williams liked to lean into? And how much does the system and style of play impact what you're allowed to showcase? So, and that's where I split the hairs of the team workout, saying this is something that he wasn't allowed to do. But as you and I pointed out, Doug, the free throw shooting percentage, and that's what Candace leaned on. She said, listen, it's a metric for a reason, and it's one that you can hang your hat on more often than not. He doesn't shoot great from the line. And I will, this is Candace, will go the extra mile of saying De'Ron Sharpe in the short term is not going to be breaking that mold all of a sudden of being a guy that shoots 50% from the line, but also shoots 40% from beyond the arc. Those two things don't go hand in hand. So I think she just gave some tempered realities of this is a rebounder, a high energy guy. He can run the floor. He's aggressive. He's well-timed on his offensive rebounds. And again, he is an excellent passer. We agreed on it there, and the possibilities of what he can do in the pick and roll game. But she sees him as a player that will develop and grow over his first couple of seasons in the NBA. And in that regard, think Nicholas Claxton as far as developing his well-rounded skill set.
Yeah, a
little disconcerting, right? I mean, that was a little disconcerting to me because I was buoyed by what I heard coming out to the draft. And effectively, Candace just kind of brought it back down to reality, which I think is a good thing.
And what you're referring to is what we heard over the draft. This is during the Locked On NBA live draft show that had Chad Ford, who's obviously been doing this forever. Rafael Barlow, who's got to be, I mean, he's that guy. He's amazing. and true one of the, I don't even call it an up-and-comer. Like, he's just a great dude when it comes to the draft. Like, just knows everything.
That's fantastic.
If you go listen back to the episode that Adam did with him, it tells the whole story. And what Chad Ford had specifically said about Sharpe is that he didn't shoot threes at all in the summer. Excuse me, in the summer. He didn't shoot at all at UNC, but when he was during workouts, he was showing his range, and that's where our ears perked up a little bit and said, oh, okay, well, this is something that we weren't privy to. He was doing something in workouts that was different than what he had actually shown on the court in the UNC system. And this is a part where maybe this is a kind of different guy than the Nets have had. Like, think like a Brook Lopez. Like, if you think, oh, we actually got Brook Lopez in the draft, right? It's like, because Brook Lopez didn't shoot any threes, and then all of a sudden he did, and it just turned out he was awesome at it, right? But it was just because one year the Nets said, hey, you should shoot threes. And he was like, okay. And he just started making threes.
Lopez goes, oh my God, totally. I've been able to do it this whole time.
Right.
I apologize. I should have brought it up.
And I'm not really comparing these two guys because they're not the same. I mean, like, Brook Lopez's offensive game was way more polished when he came into the NBA. So it's not, this is not, again, a like for like kind of scenario. I'm more talking about a guy who never shot a three pointer in his life, basically, for actually years, even in the NBA. And then all of a sudden, one day, did it and was able to do it really well. I was just real quick looking. Yeah, like Brook Lopez shot 0 for his first 5 years. Then he shot 0.1 a game and then 0.2 a game for the next three. And then he shot in his last year in Brooklyn, shot 5 threes a game. But along the way, this guy was basically, I'm kind of just rounding at this point, was basically like an 80% free throw shooter. Right. And he was definitely an 80% free throw shooter in the years leading up to when they started letting him shoot threes. Right. It was like 80%. I'm rounding 80% for 3 years. The sample size is pretty small in 2011 because he gets hurt. Then 76, then 82, then 81. Right. So if you're looking at free throw shooting as sort of like the a metric by which you can show if a guy has a repeatable form, which some people think that is, you know, the first place to look. What Candace Cooper is correctly saying, and this is what you and I had said also, was, okay, maybe he made some open gym threes, but when he was given the opportunity to stare at a basket with no one in his face for some time, right, in college, and just shoot the ball at it, then he the results really weren't there. He's shot a few free throws in Summer League so far. He's basically hitting those at like a 60% rate. So it really, you have to agree with Candace, at least in this point of view, looking at this part, which is to say, it might come. No one's saying it's not going to, but his game has to be near the basket at this point, and that's really just the only place it's going to live, right? And so at that point, like, well, I think what you were mentioning before was, we already have a guy like that in DeAndre Jordan, basically. We have another person you're trying to develop in Nicholas Claxton. Their body types are totally different. Sharp's way more ready to at least handle the rigors of parts of the regular season when it comes to the physicality needed to play underneath when the minutes are a little less about finesse and a little bit more about, hey, we need to just have big bodies. but I don't think we can start dreaming on this like stretch five at all, which I think maybe was sold to Nets fans a little bit more than it should have been. All right, we're going to get back to all this here in a second. First, got to talk to you about something that can sometimes be tough to talk about, excessive sweating. I know I went through this for years, worried about what shirt you're going to wear, having to swap out shirts, you know, kind of not wanting to get up in public, really kind of, you know, no pun intended, sweating it out ahead of time about how you're going to deal with the situation. Got to tell you, no more, my friends. That is why you need Sweatblock. I've been using Sweatblock here recently. This stuff absolutely works. I've dealt with it, speaking in public, changing shirts. It's all been there, but it's all gone now with Sweatblock antiperspirant wipes. Sweatblock is stronger and more effective than the most clinical antiperspirants. You put it on the night before, you go to bed, the next morning you wake up, wash, go about your day, and you're not worried about sweat anymore. It sounds too good to be true. Believe me, I lived this for years, not worrying about it anymore. No more pitting out. No more picking out shirts that you think are going to hide it better than others. You're not worried about it anymore. You need to check out Sweatblock. If you or someone you love are dealing with this, take it from me. This stuff works. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon or CVS. 20% off, sweatblock.com, promo code LOCKEDON, sweatblock.com. And speaking of sweat, sometimes the daily stress of life can weigh on your body. If you're an elite athlete or maybe someone a little more like me just trying to get through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun's a handheld progressive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension. It's quiet as a toothbrush, too. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good. It gets to the source of the pain by releasing that tension. Uses that percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than just vibrations alone. Theragun's trusted out there by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, had hundreds of thousands of customers. Try Theragun for 30 days at only $199. Go to therabody.com/lockedon right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's therabody.com/lockedon. Therabody.com/lockedon.
Well, and that's the other curiosity too, because he's already dropped weight from where he was, played at 265 in college. I'm not sure where he's at at this moment right now, but he's listed the same height as Nick Claxton, 6'11". You know, Claxton, by the way, you and I talked about it when they drafted him, and then when he was starting to develop, same thing. They said they're going to try to work a little bit of perimeter, gave him a couple opportunities, and we effectively had those dreams dash when you didn't see him taking any in some preseason games and into the regular season. And his free throw shooting, which was higher in college than it's ever been at the NBA level, was something that kind of misled us a little bit down that road with him. You mentioned 60% for Dayron in the summer league from the line. Now, even that would be an uptick from college. So, you know, we can watch that. You can monitor that and say, if he's shooting 50% in college and he shoots 60% his rookie year, that's a big jump. If he shoots almost 65% in year number two, yeah, that's another big jump. And then you can start to think about how it stretches out. The reason why I brought up his weight is because I do wonder in that regard of what do the Nets envision him developing into and what does he see himself developing into? Because I also talked with Cooper about dropping that weight and saying, is that going to help him on the defensive end? Because one of the one of the areas of his game that he's going to struggle in is, even though he was willing and capable of getting out of the perimeter, he, for his size, was able to stay with shooters. But it's going to be a really big ask to move that body around and effectively be out on the perimeter defensively without fouling, without getting blown past on the baseline, etc. So you drop the weight to be a little bit lighter and a little bit quicker on your feet. Is that a, you know, can we take that as an indicator of he's trying to get lighter, he's trying to develop that shooting area of his game, and this player is going to look starkly different as a pro in the long run, as opposed to what he looked like in college. So he's going to be more of a, this, it's a terrible spectrum, but he's going to be more of a Brook Lopez than a DeAndre Jordan, right? DeAndre Jordan came in, rim runner, rocking after it, rebounds. That was his career. That's what he's been. That's what he's always going to be. I would be disappointed if that was all that De'Ron Sharpe was going to be as an NBA player, not in terms of, you know, total career, but if that's all that his skill set was, it would be a little deflating to think that that's where the Nets chose to go at that spot, because maybe there were some other opportunities there. Maybe there was another player to look at, or another spot to move that asset to get something back in return that maybe offers you a better short-term impact. I don't know. And I feel like I'm going trending negative on Sharp. We can get into it. I like what he's going to bring to the table this year. I think it's going to be a nice piece to add to it, but it's not going to add an area of game that we thought specifically you and I, the Nets would look to have when adding a big man, whether in the draft or free agency. It's going to have this shooting component. And as of right now, we can't assume De'Ron does.
There could be a part of the Nets, and I am trending more and more along these lines when it comes to the centers and trying to, you know, figure out ultimately, and we've talked about this so many times now, so I apologize, or I've talked about it so many times, I think, where there is this difference between regular season, like regular season value and postseason value, right? And because you need yes. to play, you need yep. to play a whole regular season. So, and sometimes I think that's forgotten, even by me at times, about where, you know, about players' values. And sometimes why it's so confusing when we see, frankly, specifically see centers, but sometimes you see this around point guards and stuff too, is that you're like, you got paid what? Like, for what? It's like, well, you got to play 82 games before the playoffs. And you need guys around, and you need guys around that can play the minutes during the year, because you're just not going to get all the way to the playoffs without these guys. That's why we talked about why you can't have Blake Griffin be your starting center, I don't think, really, for large chunks of the season, because it just, like, it should be a waste. It should be a waste to do it, right? Like, for what? For to get him hurt, to have him just get bloodied and bruised for an entire regular season, and then not have him for the playoffs? Like, it would just be the wrong move, I think. And this is where,
by the way, real quick, one of the last things that Cooper brought up was, I can't believe I almost forgot this. I was saying we looked at him as being a replacement for DeAndre Jordan, and that's what he's going to model his game after, etc. And Candace brought up that De'Ron Sharpe, from a developmental standpoint, should be looking to and has the baseline skill sets to develop into a Blake Griffin,
yeah.
A Blake Griffin of now,
right?
And what we saw from Blake Griffin this past season. And I thought that was really interesting to say, hey, is he more DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin? And to say that he can be more Blake Griffin and he can gear his game to that, that got me very excited. That I thought, okay, that's versatility. That's both ends of the floor impact, certainly, and far more multifaceted as opposed to being really one-dimensional like DeAndre.
Exactly. And so if you think that that's going to be the case, where he can play high in the post at times and be able to distribute a little bit and pass out of the post just enough to kind of keep defenses honest, that he's not going to have the athleticism. Because, like, the other thing about DeAndre and Blake is, especially at their peak, were like A-plus athletes. Like, they were,
yes.
They were the creme de la creme of just total athleticism. And so that's what their game was basically predicated on for a long time. Blake's kind of turned his game into something else now that has a little bit more finesse to it. But for so long, it was just his whole game was, hey, I'm just going to, like, dunk over you, drop my underwear on your top of your head. And, like, that's going to be how my game is played. And DeAndre, too, is just like, I'm going to live so far above the rim that you're not going to be able to do anything about it. I am going to be able to protect the rim pretty well. I'm quick enough. When that stuff goes, it goes pretty fast. Blake's been able to translate it into being pretty serviceable / good with the way he plays now. DeAndre's game, at least from the playoffs, does not translate. But again, I'm almost positive we're going to see him playing a decent amount when it comes to the regular season, just because you just need to fill these minutes somewhere. And if you think if De'Ron Sharpe is somewhere in between those guys, and by the way, one of the reasons we haven't seen Claxton as much, even though everyone gets super excited about the ability to switch around the perimeter and the, you know, times where he's locking up guards and looking really, really feisty, two of the reasons he's had trouble staying on the court. One, he's just not physical. He's just not big enough. Like, he's just not, like, the physicality piece for him when you're really banging bodies is actually a problem. Some of the offensive game needs maturing, especially around his vision and his timing and stuff. And so knowing that he's not a complete product either, there is going to be this world where we could see lots of different looks when it comes to big men. And at that point, there was no reason to draft another one-for-one guy. Like, if we're just agreeing now that Sharp is different than the rest of the guys, not necessarily better, but he's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, then maybe it does fit into that, to a mold of, hey, well, now we have four of these dudes, and we can mix and match where we want to use them, and we can see kind of who ends up fitting the best, right? Because they're clearly not all alike.
No.
They're all wildly different from each other. And so there's a world where we say, okay, if he's just enough like the other three guys, that ends up being the most valuable piece. That he doesn't need to be the best, he doesn't need to be better than any of them at any one thing, because you might not be. But if he's if he's like a solid B minus at everything, that it might be better than being an A at one thing and kind of a D in other places, right? And like that, there's because that's kind of what the Nets have on their hands with the other three big men.
Well, and that's a little bit, yeah, when you, but that's a really positive perspective to bring to it. And I think there's real traction to that. I'm actively, as we say, we do our rundowns. We talk about what we're going to cover here, but sometimes you just roll across what we affectionately refer to here on the show as a Doug Nugget, and we just uncovered one, my friends. I like the idea of that, and to your point, the curiosity I'll have is, so there's a couple things. One, just like we talked about how James Harden, how Kyrie Irving, how Kevin Durant, different players benefit from those stars in different ways, right? Nicholas Claxton, when you had Harden, it was oh, okay. looks like you're the greatest player we've ever seen. You deserve a Jared Allen-type contract. And then when Harden was taken away, okay, there's a different look here. You see some of the limitations of a Claxton. My curiosity would be, to your point about if De'Ron Sharpe is just physical enough and can play just enough perimeter defense, well, all of a sudden, and this again leans into that Blake Griffin type of idea of, well, now you're a second unit blended guy that can be serviceable in these handful of areas to a moderate degree, and that's good enough. Because then we get a role with Nicholas Claxton where he's just doing a lot of the athleticism and moving with the guards on the defensive end. And maybe a little bit of DeAndre Jordan just being a rebounder and doing those doing that thing with his, lead feet in the lane. He's gonna do it all for you. But the question I want to ask you then is, what's the world where in second, as these rotations happen, is there ever a world where DeAndre Jordan, we mentioned before about Cam Thomas, we were running him down, sorry, stumbling here a little bit. Is there ever a world where you see a regular season game where Nicholas Claxton, De'Ron Sharpe, and Cam Thomas are all out there on the floor together just wreaking young havoc?
I guess anything's possible. I think it's so easy in the offseason to forget what the regular season is like. We just came off a regular season where the Nets, the whole story about the Nets last year was that the big three guys never played together, right? That's all been forgotten, basically, because of the playoffs, and even with the guys being hurt, it still is not even something that's really talked about, because hope springs eternal around the beginning of seasons, and right now all three guys are healthy. So at the beginning of the season, short of something happening in preseason, that they're all going to go in and be healthy to start the season. But again, don't forget, it doesn't take much. And now this season might not have the scheduling nightmare that last season was, and it might be a little bit, it's shaping up to be much more normal in terms of how things are spaced out. And maybe we don't see the rash of injuries that we saw last season. But we are all season removed, where the Nets spent the entire season playing with, kind of wondering who was playing on a given night, right? It just doesn't take much. And so is there a world where those guys play together? I really hope there is. Because here's the thing. There's one thing that's known. What we know right now is what the Nets have when the three superstars are healthy. They don't even need to play the regular season. In a lot of ways, I think the regular season for the Nets is going to be, it'll be exciting, but it will be, what is it really going to tell us? Is it going to tell us anything about, at least about the championship version of them? Is it going to?
Well, do we really know that Kevin Durant is one of the best players? I mean, for sure.
So, I mean, like,
are you willing to commit?
What are we going to learn here? We're not going to learn much. We're going to learn how Patty Mills works out here. We're going to learn, if Blake can stand up.
Well,
I'll
push back on you though. I think what we will learn is whether or not Cam Thomas can be a factor, whether or not De'Ron Sharpe, whether or not Nicholas Claxton can be a playoff contributor for this team.
Sorry, that's where I was going. I was going to get to the point where...
that's my point. You have to make your own.
I was going to get to the point where I was like, the thing that the Nets probably are incentivized to find out are those questions, are those next pieces, because there's no... I hate to say this because the season hasn't started. There's just no world where the Nets don't make the playoffs. That right? Okay, so let's just start there. Like, I can't even picture what would happen for them to not make the playoffs. It would be so
I don't
want to
live in a world where the Nets aren't in the playoffs, Doug.
It's just not going to happen. They're going to be really terrible things could happen and they would still make the playoffs, right? So I'm not even going to go through the scenarios because it'd be too depressing. But they're just going to make the playoffs. So if we understand that point, then it's like, okay, well, you know, seeding and all that stuff. Okay, that's kind of what you end up figuring out at the end of the season. No big deal. We'll kind of know that at the end. What we can learn is like what you just said, which I was going to say first if you had let me finish, which is I think the Nets will really probably lean heavily into these ideas because they'll just know it too. There's nothing like last year was a little different. It's like we actually don't know what Harden and Kyrie and KD look like, right? Like it's just
what is the relationship for these players?
It would help to have them on the court. It would help to have them. You know, we're getting Harden sort of mid-season-ish. It'd be nice to develop chemistry. Turns out James Harden just has chemistry with kind of everybody when he's healthy. So that's, like, not really a thing.
I work super well with, like, a guy that plays basketball.
Well, and then also just turns out that everyone fits with Kevin Durant because he's the best. And at that point, you're just kind of good. And then everyone also, these guys also fit with Kyrie when Kyrie's in this mindset of where he kind of landed, which was, hey, I'll do my scoring thing when it's needed, and otherwise James Harden has the ball. So it turned out like that was all kind of known. We know it now also too. So at this point, it is going to be about some of these other younger guys to see what they have and see how they fit in, because I think the regular season is mostly going to be not solved, but I can't wait to watch it because I think the Nets are just going to steamroll teams, obviously, but From a what are we going to learn standpoint, these are really the only questions we're going to probably ask ourselves. Going to get Adam's response to that here in a second. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. Built Bar is focused on the flavors, folks. It's what makes it the very best protein bar on the market. Point, stop, coconut, raspberry, cherry, barcia, double chocolate, orange, cookies, and cream. They've been focused on the flavors to make sure you get the best protein bar experience you can get, and they got the stats to back it up as well. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from just 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar as well, only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Those are the stats that you want to hear when you talk about Built Bar. Right now, you order today, get the Grasshopper Cookie. That's if you want the thin mint kind of flavor. It also was the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Go over to built.com, promo code locked on. That's built.com, promo code locked on for 15% off your order. Promo code locked on, 15% off at built.com.
And let's say you're out there in the streets and you're looking to place a bet. Maybe you're at home in front of your laptop. Whether it is on that computer or the mobile device you find in your pocket, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. As we know, baseball season is continuing to ramp up towards playoff and wild card pushes. You can track all that action right on BetOnline. All the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs from MLB to NBA and NHL as they get their next seasons underway. And of course, UFC and MMA action as well. Before the next pitch, before the next tip, all of your sporting action, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or that mobile device and check out the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in on the game as teams continue those playoff runs and preparing for championship aspirations. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Promo code Locked On. Yeah, so the quick point on that and then a question for you. I think the opportunity for these young players will come in the form of, because I do expect the big three to play a lot together, right? To your point, I know they're trying to figure things out last year. They're going to play a ton together, and they're going to steamroll a bunch of teams, which means, unlike last year, you're going to get these opportunities to say, and now you guys go ahead and take a rest. Let's let the young kids go ahead and mop this thing up for us, and that'll be where these guys get some exposure. The question I have for you, going back to, this is part two, as we know, friends, please go visit part one if you didn't hear us talk about Cam Thomas. In that regard, Da'Ron Sharpe, does he have, in your mind, the season kicks off, Da'Ron Sharpe already has a minutes share, has a role for himself right out of the gate as opposed to Cam Thomas? Do you think that we'll see more Da'Ron Sharpe with more consistency before we see Cam Thomas get into his rhythm of whatever his role is going to be for the season?
No. I don't think Da'Ron Sharpe has a set thing. I think Thomas does. I think Thomas. Yeah, I can kind of confidently say like he could be like their seventh guy or something like that, right? And maybe their eighth guy at worst. Sharpe, we might not see him to start the season, and so I'm less confident about. I think that they probably want to play him, but we've seen the stuff get weird with these guys. Like Reggie Perry, you know, we thought we were going to see him at times, even when they were really down big men, and he just never worked his way into it. He's probably on his way out. Hey, frankly, by the time you listen to this podcast, he might not be on the team anymore. I'm not sure. I mentioned the rescinding the qualifying offer. He's gotten buried on the bench. I don't know what needed to happen. So this Reggie Perry take could be a day late, depending on when you listen, because we're recording this part. We recorded this as a one long conversation on Monday evening. But I don't think the Sharpe thing is anywhere close to set in stone. I do believe the Thomas thing. And hey, there could be room for surprises here. You don't know. They might want to bring some of these guys along. So I don't think it would be the case with Thomas though. But yeah, Sharpe, I think there's huge question marks still about. I think we sort of like have seen beginnings of the game, but I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't see a ton of him to start the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't be blown by it either. And just more the curiosity, because that really ties in just to the DeAndre Jordan piece, and he's still on the roster, and we assume he's going to be on the roster. And Sean Marks had those comments around, yeah, when you're a really good team, other teams are going to call about players. That's kind of the way they wrapped up and tied a bow on the DeAndre Jordan moving him in trade scenarios and everything else. And if you believe in that, then you have to believe that he's still going to have a role for this team. He's still going to have a role on this roster, and the hierarchy has to fall somewhere. So by the time I think you said this one, you know, when you're breaking up the minutes, well, there's only 48 per game. You only have so many spots, so someone's going to suffer. I'll be interested to see. And again, as we highlighted that conversation with Candace Cooper, my biggest takeaway was nothing negative about his game, Da'Ron Sharpe, more just about how long the development may take and where the expectations should be coming into the season. So, you know, probably hold your breath a little bit on him, and then because of Summer League, maybe get a little more ramped up about Cam Thomas.
Oh, yeah. I think in the end, the Nets are going to look at this draft as being another total win. They've just been great at this. They've been able to draft near the back end of the first round and the second round and be able to do this consistently. There's at this point, you just have to give them the benefit of the doubt on almost everybody. It has not been perfect, but their batting average is way high. It's not perfect for everybody, so it's not like no one's 100% around this stuff. At this point, you just strictly look at batting average, and the Nets batting average for where they draft is about as high as it gets. It's sometimes funny too, because I sometimes forget that they didn't draft Dinwiddie, but it feels like they did, right? I was going to include him sort of
right.
in that.
Didn't draft Joe Harris, but
yeah,
effectively.
But effectively they did, because their other, the teams that drafted him didn't seem to want them. So it's like they drafted him. You're right. I sometimes fall into this trap of, I do include those guys as if they were draft picks, but they technically weren't. But in my mind, They're all part of the same batting average. Bruce Brown's like this too, right? In some ways, not exactly because they traded for him, but
But I do lump it into the same conversation of what you turn your picks into, and that's effectively what the Nets do, right? You turn exactly. them into these players, and that is a part of the success rate at the back end of the draft, free agency, and really, in totality, off-season moves, right? The Nets have a good batting average.
They don't have a good batting average. They have this is like Honus Wagner stuff. Like, they have an unbelievable batting average on this stuff. I know you know that, but I just wanted to make sure.
Sorry, I didn't mean good. I meant not that bad.
There you go. Perfect. All right. We're going to get out of here. Rolled through a multi-part episode. Probably end up doing a couple more of these during the off-season as well, as we just get a little more conversational around the Nets and what the future is going to bring. We're also going to look back in the past as well. There's plenty of stuff to talk about, some what-if scenarios that are pretty cool around the Nets organization. Hopefully by the end of the week, after you've listened to this, we're going to get into what the Nets maybe final roster looks like too, because they, as of this recording, they only had one spot left because they had signed Kessler Edwards to a two-way. We're going to get more into that. And then hopefully we'll know who that last slot on the roster is going to be after this last summer league game, which we'll also break down. Either we did it the previous episode or we'll do it in the next episode, but I have a feeling we're going to roll these back to back. In the meantime, make sure you rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Like and subscribe. Leave a review. It really helps us climb those podcast charts. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen.
Oh, man. Sometimes it feels like we're just having fun here being kids talking about basketball. I don't want a grown-up person at all. A grown-up won't listen to me. He won't learn. He will try to do things his own way, not mine. So I have to find a child. I want a good, sensible, loving child. One to whom I can tell all my precious candy-making secrets while I'm still alive. William Wonka.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.